Welcome to the Unseminary Podcast.
Are you looking for practical ministry help to drive your ministry further, faster? Have a sinking feeling that your ministry training didn't prepare you for the real world? Hey, you're not alone. Join thousands of others in pursuit of stuff that we wish they had taught in seminary. Buckle up and let's get started with this week's Unseminary Podcast.
Well, good morning. Happy Thursday, everybody. It's Rich Birch, the host of the Unseminary Podcast. Thanks so much for tuning in. This is the podcast where we try to provide kind of practical insights from amazing church leaders from across the country. Today, we have a great guest on our show. In fact, this church, East Lake Church, I think has been mentioned more than any other ministry as a ministry that people are following and looking at, which is amazing. So I'm super excited to have George McHale on the phone with us today. George, thanks for being on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Rich.
Yeah, I'm super excited you're here. Thanks so much for taking time out. George, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and about Eastlake?
Yeah, sure. So my story kind of started all the way back in high school, I would say, when I kind of started rebelling a little bit against the church background that I grew up in and started to ask some of the deeper questions of life and, you know, what am I doing here? How am I going to invest this one life that I have? And really started down a path of, I don't really believe in God. I don't really, you know, think there's any point to this thing. But after some time and after kind of talking to my dad, who was really always harping at me, like, you got to start taking your life more seriously and all that kind of stuff. I made a turn and just kind of started to take things more seriously. So since then, it has been a fun journey. I got married really young. My wife and I found Eastlake when it was about a year old at the time, 2006, and we fell in love with it. It started going every week. At that time, it was about 300 people meeting at a junior high. So it was an interesting season. It was definitely, there's a lot going on in the Seattle area. So Eastlake was started by our lead pastor, Ryan Meeks, and nine friends. They moved up from San Diego, and you know, Ryan had a lot of friends up here. Went to high school up here with his wife, Michelle. And really, there was nothing up here as far as churches that existed for people who, I guess, didn't have a church background or weren't church people, so to speak. So Ryan would describe it as he wanted to start a church for his friends who had a hangover Sunday morning and really didn't have anywhere to go. And so that's kind of how Eastlake started. So about a year and a half into Eastlake, we're really just blowing up. 1,400 people by, I think, 2.5 years in.
Wow.
Outgrew the space we were meeting in, and in 2007 relocated about 5 miles north to a town called Bothell, which is about 25 miles north of Seattle. Okay. And ever since then, things have just been taking off. So in 3 years since moving into Bothell, we were running about 5,000 and once again had a space issue and had to decide, like, what are we going to do? Are we going to try to raise $30 million and build a building? Or are we going to try to dabble in this multi-site thing that we keep hearing about? And so 2010, we decided we were going to try multi-site. And so we started a campus in Bellevue, which is on the east side of Lake Washington. And so we had two sites, the Bothell location and the Bellevue location. But really realized pretty quickly, about 4 months in, that we weren't ready for whatever this was. We weren't a multi-site church. And so in month five, we did something that I think surprised a lot of people. We closed our Bellevue location and went back to just a single location church. And that was interesting because Bellevue was actually really successful. There was 800, 900 people attending.
Wow.
And it was successful by, you know, all standards. It was financially self-sustaining, but there was something just not there. There was something missing about what that was. And so closed it and just decided, hey, we'll figure out some other way to address our crowding issue. So we added services and, you know, just really tried to figure out a way to manage it for a while until we had a better plan. So,
well, there's a lot there. I'm like, gosh, there's a lot to unpack right out of that. No, that's fantastic. You know, on, you know, Eastlake, you know, I know when it's your own story, it's like, oh, you know, okay, we grew and it's 5,000 people. You know, this isn't in the South. You know, you are in the Northwest. I know you know this. Kind of place where people don't attend church. It's just not, you know, it's not in, there's not the cultural assumption that you would attend church, you know, just normally. So what, you know, what is it that's kind of, do you believe kind of God's using to draw people to Eastlake?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think that, I mean, for me at least, I can go back to my story. And,
yeah.
And that, so that sort of that rebellion, that discontentment that I was feeling, I think what I loved about Eastlake that struck me right away, and I think my wife would identify with this, and most of the people that love Eastlake would, is just that you get this overwhelming sense that people are real. People are authentic. People are just friendly. They're warm. They're not faking it as much as you cannot fake it, I think,
right.
To a stranger on a Sunday morning, you know, holding a cup of coffee and smiling.
Right.
I think it starts there. You know, I think it starts by accepting people just right where they're at. And I know that's how I felt. And I know that was the thing that really allowed me to give God and faith and the spiritual journey another shot. It's like, oh, there's normal people that actually engage in this. And that I think was a turning point for me, and I've heard that story sort of repeated over and over again. But you're right. I mean, not a lot of church around here. A lot of church background. A lot of people would say that we're the least church city, or we were the least church city. I don't know if that's true anymore, but
certainly
was the case years ago.
Now, what's your role at Eastlake? What do you do? You know, what's your kind of day to day there?
Yeah, so I am the executive pastor, which is just the easiest way to explain it. We don't really use a lot of titles. I don't have like a business card or anything, but it's just, I found that saying that title actually just explains it a lot easier than anything else. So.
Definitely. All right, so now let's go back to the, you know, unique story of you were one campus, went to two, it was growing, succeeding, paying the bills, and then you compressed back, but then now you have subsequently gone out and launched campuses. What was it that kind of, you know, helped you? What was the kind of, what turned the corner for you to be able to do that?
I think it was just really admitting that, A, we weren't ready the first time. We did it all wrong. And then trying to really analyze, okay, why? What wasn't working? And that sort of described that intangible sense that we just weren't ready.
Right.
I think what that really came down to was we were trying to just import what we had at the first site to this other place without really caring about this other place, right? Mm-hmm. So it was like you had this main campus mentality where they had all the bells and whistles, they had all like the best staff, everything was at the main campus.
Right.
And then the other campus down the street, well, you know, they got some of the best staff every other week maybe, and you know, they just had like, it was just subpar. So. And they were close enough to where that was actually kind of noticeable to a lot of people. I know, like, I wasn't even on staff at this time yet.
Okay.
And so even for me and my wife, we would go to both just depending on, you know, the week, which one our friends were going to or whatever. And so that sense existed there. So going multi-site, we knew that going multi-site again in 2011, we knew that we had to do it differently. And that really that started, I think, with how we approached our structure, how we approached our staffing, and what commitments we are going to make to all of our sites to basically try to keep them as uniform as possible and not have this glorified overflow room feel. We didn't want to do multi-site in that way, which is, I think, how it felt the first time around.
Okay. So now tell me a bit about, you know, how you structured. What does that look like? Obviously, multi-site, one of the realities of churches that are in multi-site is there's, you know, it's constantly evolving and changing. Why don't you talk us through how you're structured, what you've learned in that, what do you think is kind of transferable to other churches so that other churches don't do the same thing of kind of have to close down, you know, a campus?
Yeah, definitely. Well, I mean, I'm actually like really surprised that you started this off by saying a lot of people are looking to us to kind of see how we're doing. Because that's not scary, but because we don't know what we're doing. So, geez, people are learning from us that yeah, we've got some problems. But basically, what we've done is really try to approach structure by thinking ahead to kind of where we want to be, and not so much where we're at, what our current realities are. Mm-hmm. And I think if we would have done that from the onset, we could have avoided some issues. But really, I think just the awareness that your structure is going to need to be flexible and bend within every iteration of multi-site and every staff member that you add, and you know, every department that you're trying to improve. So so for us, it really was, and this is actually one of the main reasons I was brought on staff. It was 2 months before we went multi-site the second time. I was brought on staff, and my role was very vague. It was basically figure out central support, right, whatever that means. Here's some books to read. Some couple people are doing it. Go figure it out. And so that was really kind of how we started. Was let's try to figure out what are the things that we can centralize, what are the things that need to be localized, and really what is the goal of multi-site? Is it to be as efficient as possible? Is it to have as many campuses as possible? Is it to have big campuses? Like, what are we really trying to do? And I think where we've landed, and where we're landing, I guess we changed our minds quite a bit, but is that really the most effective use of multi-site is to be able to replicate resources as efficiently as possible in multiple locations, so that we don't have to build that $30 million building,
right,
and be a regional site. And there's so many ramifications just within that, you know, like just being a one regional location that people were, you know, for us, people were driving 40, 50 minutes sometimes just to get to our one location.
Yep.
And one of the things that we say, that we've heard is, it's hard to be the church where you don't live. You know, if you have to drive out to 50 miles, then it's really, really hard to do ministry in your normal life, you
right.
know, outside of Sunday. If how are you going to invite your friend to drive that long
right,
you,
exactly.
to go to church? And so that was our big critique, was we wanted to take the church to the communities, not just be, again, that overflow room. So consistency across all sites is something that we've really tried to adapt. And we've really tried to be intentional about killing our main campus, our Bothell location, because we don't want this mothership feel. We avoid main campus language, all that kind of stuff is just out of our vocabulary.
Mm-hmm.
It's our biggest site, it's our original site, but it's not our main campus. There's really nothing about it other than its size that makes it our main campus. So I think that's been a big part of it.
Yeah. What are some of the other kind of practical ways that you, you know, as you try to kind of live that out? So language is one of those ways. Are there other ways that you try to imbue kind of, hey, this isn't like the stepchild campus to, you know, your other locations?
Yeah. So from day one, what we did was Ryan and anyone who was speaking left the main site. So they went to our Seattle location from day one. And then from there, about 10 months in a multi-site, we started to catch wind of this new thing that was happening, thanks to Life Church in Oklahoma, and that was pre-filming a message. Mm-hmm. And so it's something that they do periodically, just depending on their schedule and whatnot, but we kind of wanted to take it a step further and say, what happens if you do this every week?
Right.
And so probably one of the more unique things that we do is we pre-film all of our messages. So every Thursday, Ryan comes in, or if it's a guest speaker, they come in, and they film the message for Sunday. So by the end of the day, Thursday, we'll have the message ready to go to play, and then all of our locations are video. So on a given Sunday, you cannot find a live speaker at any Eastlake location, which is great. Gives us so much flexibility. It's one of those things where we can be, you know, like right now, we're about a month and a half ahead. So we have church in the can for the next 2 months, which gives us a ton of flexibility. So that when you show up to the quote-unquote main campus and there's no dude up there speaking live, that pretty much is a big hint.
That's huge. Now, have you found, because the church I'm in, Liquid Church, we actually were doing that for a while, but we found that at the campus that we originated from, when we switched to video, it felt like we were taking something away. You know, it felt like, you know, in your case, Ryan used to be here live, now he's not. And it's almost like we're punishing that campus. Have you found those dynamics, or that hasn't worked out? Or that's on purpose?
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't know that it's so much on purpose, but it's definitely a learning. It's
right.
So first of all, I would say that when we went multi-site, Ryan did a great job of preparing us for the inevitable, which was we're going to lose people, right? People are used to a certain experience, a certain commodity when they show up to church that, you know, depending on their level of buy-in, they're not going to be okay with a dramatic change like this.
Right.
One of the unfortunate decisions that we made when we went multi-site was we tried to, I think, overcompensate for this fear, this impending reality, which was we're going to take something major away from Bothell. And the way that we decided to compensate for this was we were going to give Bothell a hologram experience because we wanted them to have something. I mean, we were taking away their live speaker. So true story, we bought a hologram and we projected a illusionary hologram image at our Bothell location so that when you showed up, it looked like something out of Star Wars. And it was, not fun. We killed that in about 3 months.
Oh, gosh.
And just kind of decided to land on the fact that, hey, you know what? They're going to have to be okay with losing something.
So. If anyone needs a hologram projection system, you've got one for sale.
We do, absolutely. So just call me. Be happy to sell it to you.
Nice. That's fantastic. Now, one of the words I've heard, described about your church is that you're unconventional, that you kind of think about things in a different way. Can you think of a couple ways or maybe one way that, you know, you think you kind of approach things in an unconventional manner? What you're doing on video, I think, is unconventional. It does push against the natural wisdom, even in multi-site, is that, hey, you still need to have somebody show up somewhere and preach in front of a live audience on a Sunday.
Definitely. Yeah. That's probably the main thing pragmatically. I would say the other thing is that's always kind of been in our ethos is that a low staff participation as far as who's carrying out the ministry. You know, the idea of priesthood of all believers is something that we actually try to live out as much as possible. And so we have a very high volunteer culture. We run about 30% staffing. 30% of our budget goes to staffing.
Oh, my goodness. Wow.
Which... Yeah, most books you'll read will tell you anywhere from 45 to 60. But really, just across the board, not just staffing, we try to run a very simple, very low budget as far as what we spend money on to carry out the ministry. We'd rather spend the resources that come in on things like supporting Charity Water, which is one of our big partners that helps bring clean water to nations all across the world. But this idea that volunteers can actually do a lot of the things that traditional ministry staff roles would do has really helped shape everything about us. It helps people feel like they're needed, and therefore it helps us establish community. Like that has really deep roots, I think, where people are believe in Eastlake because they're helping pull off Eastlake.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's, I think, when I think unconventional, I think of that. I think that, man, if we didn't have volunteers, we couldn't pull off a Sunday. And it's just really that simple.
Now, do you know what your staff to attendance ratio is? What does that look like? And so 30% you're spending, what does that look like kind of, you know, full-time staff to Sunday attendance?
Well, we have 38 full-time staff and we average about 4,200 across all campuses. So whatever that ratio is.
Right. Wow. That's amazing. Math. Yeah. I'm not good at math. So that's fantastic. And you know, the thing I don't want people to miss there, what that has allowed Eastlake to do, one of the things, if you journey with Eastlake and kind of follow them, you know, they're a very generous church. You've done a very good job on, you know, motivating your people to be generous, but then just out of, you know, just out of the normal offering, you know, you do a lot of work, which is incredible. I think that resonates with the community. That's one of those things that I think is attractive externally to what Eastlake's up to.
Yeah. And actually, too, that actually goes back to the whole unconventional thing. I mean, even the way that we go about it, I would say, is unconventional. We've thrown two parties now over the last few years that we've called Drinks for Drinks, which basically is just a giant kegger that we invite a local cover band. They come out. The last one, a couple of years ago, we had about 1,800 people come. And actually, so most of those people don't even go to Eastlake. We promote it in the community and ended up in one night raising $850,000. That went to Cambodia for clean water. So,
fantastic. Anything else you'd love to share with our listeners before we jump into the lightning round?
No, I think we covered a lot there. So yeah, hit me with the lightning round, Rich.
Nice. All right, here we go. So, you know, one of the questions we ask every week on the lightning round is, what is an online resource that you've been using these days that's particularly helpful with your ministry?
Honestly, with our ministry, we've had our heads in a lot of different books primarily right now. But online has been we're in a weird season. We're sort of unlearning a lot of what we know. That's kind of the world that we're living in right now. So, mm-hmm. So for me, I'm an ENTJ, like really concrete thinker. So the tools that I use to carry things out, Evernote couldn't live without managing all my projects and that's really systematic. But we're not really using a ton other than just your, you know, your basic F1, you know, Fellowship One is what we use for our CRM. We're building our own online platform right now that is helping keep things organized, help us monitor our stats and things like that. But beyond that, there's not really a collaborative like tool or anything that, that we're pointing to say, hey, you need this.
Nice.
So sorry, that's not super helpful.
No, that's fine. That's great. What's a book you've read recently? I don't know, last 6 months or so that's had an impact on your thinking.
Oh man, there's been quite a few. The End of Religion has rocked me quite a bit. Yeah. Generous Orthodoxy, Brian McLaren has been a really helpful a book in just helping me shift my perspective on Jesus and sort of who his ministry was meant to reach, and really the answer to that is everyone. And I think I've missed that before, you know, that it really is as simple as just love people, you know, love everyone. Start there. That's our job. Our job isn't to figure out who's in, who's out, and who we're supposed to condemn. And our job is really to love people. And that's been a huge part of my journey over the last year, is coming to that realization. It's so funny to think about. Just trying to make that clear, I think, in the Great Commandment. We just kind of overlook that.
Blow past that, that's for sure. Yeah. What's another ministry that's inspiring you these days?
I love, obviously, what the Meeting House is doing. We've been talking to them quite a bit. There's a lot of similarities, like eerily similar between what's going on in Canada and Seattle. So we look to them quite a bit. Mile High Vineyard in Denver is another one. Jay Pathick, who wrote co-wrote The Art of Neighboring, which is another book that we're really leaning on right now to help carry out sort of our discipleship process, which basically is as simple as, hey, start by loving your actual real-life next-door neighbor,
right?
And communities will be transformed through that. So I would say those two ministries are the ones we're leaning into right now the most.
Nice. If you could get 15 minutes with any leader alive, who would you want to get that with and why?
Man, I have been blown away by Pope Francis lately.
That's so true.
I've just been following. I Google his name every now and then just to see what he's been up to lately, and just been really inspired by what he's doing. I think just really living out Jesus's call to serve the poor and just to humble ourselves, even in his role, to be able to do it to the extent that he is doing it. That's incredible. So if I had 15 minutes with him, I would love to just pick his brain on what, you know, what it is about his practices, what it is about just the way that he orders his life to sort of be the person that he is. It's fascinating.
Absolutely. He's not wearing the red shoes, which goes a long way.
No doubt.
You know, that's for sure. All right. So when you're looking to just kind of kick back, have some fun, relax, you know, what do you like to do? How do you like to relax and take some time, some downtime?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, in ministry, it's always tough to strike that balance, if that, there ever is such a thing, with work and family. But definitely, my wife and my two kids are where I find my fun. Whatever it is we're doing, we love vacationing. I love even just messing around with Legos with my son, or just tea parties with my little girl. My daughter can pretty much get me to do whatever she wants. She's
so
my
true.
Daughter. So basically whatever she's up to, I'm into.
Nice.
But yeah, I love golfing whenever it's not raining, which is rare in Seattle, as you know.
Yeah.
And hiking, reading, anything basically to help energize me for what I think is an exciting time to be living.
Nice.
I really do.
Nice. Well, George, I really appreciate you being on the show today. Thanks so much for taking time out from your busy schedule. If people want to get in touch with you or with Eastlake, what's the best way to do that?
You know, our website, eastlakecc.com, has all of our contact information on it, and you can follow us there. So I would start there, and I'd love to help answer any questions.
Nice. Thanks so much, George.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to this week's Unseminary podcast. Don't be shy. We'd love to connect. Check out Unseminary Inbox. You can sign up at unseminary.com, and we'll send you helpful training resources every week. Plus, you'll gain immediate access to our exclusive members area with tons of resources you can use. Connect with Rich on Twitter at Rich Birch or through email, rich@unseminary.com. Don't forget to check out the show notes for this episode at unseminary.com. It includes links to what we talked about today and more. Leave a comment. We'd love to hear from you. Did you enjoy today's episode? Drop by iTunes and leave a review. Thanks again for tuning in to this week's Unseminary podcast. Join us next week when we'll learn more stuff we wish they taught in seminary.